Okay, good morning. Okay, so today we're continuing our series working through John's Gospel, and today we're going to meet quite a different Jesus than the one we saw last week. So last week, if you remember, Jesus was turning water into wine and bringing joy to many. But this week we're going to see a rather more challenging Jesus, and he's swinging a whip to remove animals and people from the temple. Last week Liz had a visual aid of jugs of water, but this week if I was to do a visual aid, we'd all end up in the car park. And so it probably might help you remember it, but it probably wouldn't help with the rest of the talk. So I've put that to one side. But the underlying theme here is that last week we saw Jesus at a wedding, at a feast. And that feast pointed forward to the day when the bridegroom of Christ and the bride, his church, will meet in a new promised land to live together for all eternity. And the question that you're left with is, well, how do I get an invite to that feast? What should my relationship with God look like? What should it be based upon? How do I access that? And so today, in the very next verse, Jesus comes to the temple. And the temple is the place where God dwells. It is the place where people access a relationship with God. So this week, as Jesus comes to the temple, he will teach us about the right sort of relationship with God and explain how he changes that relationship going forward. So I'm going to do it in three sections. First, just to stop and think for a moment about the context. Second, to look at the wrong type of relationship with God. And then finally, see how Jesus promises a new way as he reveals himself as the new temple. So first of all, the context. So verse 13 tells us that it's Passover time. And the Passover was one of three very significant festivals or feasts in the Jewish year. And the Passover commemorated God's action when bringing the people out of slavery in Egypt. If you remember, God's Spirit passing over any house that had smeared the blood of the Lamb on its doorframe. Anyone who was under the blood of the Lamb was safe. And the very next day, they started their journey out of Egypt and out of slavery towards the promised land. So if you like, the festival itself pointed to that forthcoming wedding feast. It pointed to the journey to the promised land. And it already gave an insight as to the basis of the relationship that God was looking for. It became vital to be under the blood of the Lamb. And every Jewish male aged above the age of 12 was required to be involved. And so the population of Jerusalem grew enormously as Jews from around the country and further afield came back to the temple to celebrate. So Passover is one of the biggest events in the life of the nation. And it's all focused on the temple. Thousands of people coming from far and wide to pay their temple tax of half a shekel and to offer an animal in sacrifice. So this is a big set piece national occasion. I think it's easy for us to underestimate the impact of what happens. So when Jesus cleanses the temple at Passover, it's more like he's interrupting a royal wedding or an opening of parliament. It's a big statement, and one that the leaders of the time would have taken very seriously and perhaps thought disrespectful to the Passover itself. But with so many people coming to the temple, the temple itself would have had to be well organized. People were coming from far and wide, and they needed an animal for sacrifice, and they needed the right money. And the temple was set up to offer both. It wasn't particularly practical for people to bring their own animal over long distance. Not to mention, even when they got it there, the animal had to meet the requirements of the priests. So if you did try and bring your own, you'd be dragging your ox or whatever it was over miles, and then when you got there, the priest might say, well, it's just not up to it. I don't quite know what you'd have replied at that point, but as a result of that, it's just much easier if you bought your approved animal there at the approved temple market on arrival. So you can sort of see that the setup is to help people celebrate Passover properly. And it's similar when paying the tax. Coins with an image of another god or king were not really acceptable in the temple. So the majority of people with a local coin or a Roman coin needed to exchange their everyday money for something that was more special temple money and acceptable within the temple. So the functions that are going on in this scene are quite helpful for people coming to the Passover. But you can probably imagine what it was like when Jesus walked in. It's going to be busy, noisy, there's animals and market traders, and lots of people moving around trying to change money or buy sacrifices. And in the middle of all this activity, Jesus picks up some cord and winds it into a whip, and he begins to clear the temple. Now, this would have been shocking. Partly because of the disruption to a major festival, but also because the authorities themselves had significant powers to remove or punish anyone disturbing the temple. You may remember that one of the charges against Jesus is this phrase, actually slightly misquoted, but the phrase, I will destroy the temple. It was one of the charges used to him in order to try and have him crucified. So they had quite significant powers. And so there's a significant risk to Jesus in doing this. And so the question is, why? And what was the key point he was making? And for that, we need to move on to the second point. So Jesus warns us about the wrong way to approach God. And this is in verses 13 to 18. Well, I wonder if you were surprised, as we heard it read, by the question that Jesus is asking in verse 18. You've got all of this going on. Jesus is going around with a whip clearing the temple. It's all dramatic stuff. And the silence is broken by the Jews approaching Jesus and saying, what sign can you show us to prove your authority to do all this? Now, I don't know about you, but I might have expected them to come and arrest him. Or throw him out. That's what you'd do if it was a normal hooligan running around with a spray paint, isn't it? You wouldn't just sort of stop and say, well, what gives you the authority to do this? It's as if they realise, isn't it, that something bigger is happening. Or perhaps they feel convicted by what he's doing. Perhaps they're remembering some of the prophecies from the Old Testament. Because by clearing the temple, Jesus picks up on several themes from the Old Testament that speak of the wrong way, of the wrong type of relationship with God. And I just want to suggest three. So first of all, don't approach God with a view to personal material gain. Don't approach God with a view to personal material gain. Well, I wonder whether the Jewish onlookers were reminded of Malachi chapter 3. It goes like this. Then suddenly the Lord you are seeking will come to his temple. The messenger of the covenant, whom you desire, will come. But who can endure the day of his coming? Who can stand when he appears? For he will be like the refiner's fire or the launderer's soap. Now, in our passage, there isn't actually any suggestion that the market holders are anything other than above board. But when Jesus cleanses the temple in Matthew 21, which might be a completely separate event, by the way, he famously accuses the same market holders of turning the temple into a den of robbers, which suggests that some market holders may not have been completely pure. Perhaps adding a little bit extra to boost their personal income. After all, they do have a rather market that's just coming to them. They've got they're quite in a strong position. And so Malachi goes on, the Lord will testify against those who defraud or oppress and those who deprive the foreigners. You see, the temple was the dwelling place of God in all his purity and holiness. It's a place marked out by sacrifice and truth, the place where sins were forgiven and the people were able to worship God. But when Jesus arrives, he finds a temple with the structures in place that actually keep most people at a distance from God. Only the chief priests can access the centre of the temple where God dwells, and everybody else is required to pay over the odds to buy their sacrifice, and therefore buy their relationship with God. Instead of encouraging the people to God, those in power around the temple have set things up to exploit, and exploit the very people who have come to meet God. And Jesus drives them out. Jesus comes to cleanse like a refiner's fire. He clears out the market traders, and in doing so he warns that approaching God or controlling access to God with a view to making some sort of material gain is not the relationship that God desires. And it's a short-sighted relationship. Jesus is king. He reigns over all. And in him we inherit everything. He wants a different relationship. And that takes us on to our next prophecy. So the second prophecy, don't approach God trusting in your own good deeds. Well, perhaps the people are reminded of Hosea 6. Verse 1 and 2 go like this. Come, let us return to the Lord. He has torn us to pieces, but will heal us. He has injured us, but he will bind up our wounds. After 2 days, he will revive us. On the third day, he will restore us, that we might live in his presence. Now, Hosea 6 points to a much greater event at the end of Jesus' life. And we'll come to that in a moment. But at this stage, when Jesus speaks in verse 19 of rebuilding the temple in 3 days, most of the people, including we read his disciples in verse 22, still think that he's referring to the actual building. See, at that time, the sacrificial system provided the way for people to come to God. But Jesus arrives at the temple and immediately starts tearing down the temple structures that support this system. And therefore he's saying that the way that the people are accessing God needs to change. The sacrificial system is not the right system. It's time for a total overhaul. And in Hosea 6, in verses 4 and 6, we're given 2 reasons why. So first of all, our relationship with God is skin deep. So in verse 4, God says, your love is like the morning mist, like the early dew that disappears. In other words, there's a lack of depth. There's a lack of consistency to the people's relationship with God. It's sporadic. It's like they're just turning up to the temple 3 times a year to do their bit. But there's nothing of substance in between. No ongoing relationship. It just disappears like the early dew. Secondly, it's got the wrong foundation. In Hosea 6, verse 6, God says this, I desire mercy, not sacrifice, an acknowledgement of God, rather than burnt offerings. So God is saying, I don't want you just to go through the motions. I don't want you just to turn up and sacrifice an animal and then go back to your daily lives and ignore me. I want to have a relationship. And I want that relationship to guide the way you live every day. I want it to matter, not to be just some checklist of things that you need to do 3 times a year. I was thinking it was a bit like the man who brings his wife flowers every week. This is something I don't do. But this is the reason, you see, just bringing flowers every week and thinking that that would be enough, but never spending any time with your wife, it's just going through the motions, isn't it? It's not actually having a relationship. That's not the reason why I don't do it, but it's a good excuse. And so Jesus stands in the temple courts, the very place where the people are expected to come and spend time with God. And when he gets there, the whole place is a throng with market traders set up to facilitate the sacrifice. The whole place is just focused on going through the motions. And anyone wanting to spend time with God or relate to God would find it difficult at best, because the whole place is set up for the ritual. And Jesus tears it down. In the New Testament, the idea extends further in Romans 12. It goes like this. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. In other words, worship isn't really about Sundays or the structures of how we spend our time together for 90 minutes. Worship really is something that happens in our everyday lives. It's giving our lives to Christ. Sunday is the chance to let that daily relationship flow out in celebration. And it's a chance to call ourselves to live a life based on his mercy for the coming week. God desires a new sort of relationship, one that affects our everyday life. And the third prophecy. Don't keep your God exclusive to yourself. So the market traders, by the time of Jesus at least, were housed in the court of the Gentiles. Now, the court of the Gentiles was the furthest place from the Holy of Holies where God was thought to dwell. But still, it was an important area, because it's the court of the Gentiles. It's the only area that the non-Jews could come to the temple and come near to God. And it was always the plan in the Old Testament that the Jewish nation would be like a light that would draw other nations to God. Isaiah 56 goes like this. The foreigners who bind themselves to the Lord, to minister to him, to love the name of the Lord and to be his servants, all who keep the Sabbath without desecrating it, and who hold fast to my covenant, these I will bring to my holy mountain and give them joy in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and sacrifices will be accepted on my altar, for my house will be called a house of prayer for all nations. So the Jews were called to share knowledge of the living God with all people, of all nations. And the court of Gentiles was part of that mission. But at the very moment that the people prepared to celebrate God's salvation from slavery, to remember the journey to the promised land, to think of that future feast together, the one court of the temple open to the Gentiles has been overrun with market traders and money changers. The structures that supported the sacrificial system actually prevent the Gentiles from coming anywhere near to him. What seems to be structures to help worship actually make it hard, if not impossible, for an outsider to come to God. Put in our language, the temple may claim to be a welcoming church. It may claim to be seeker-friendly, but when it came to it, they only had one area for newcomers to sit. They had already filled it up with things that they needed to complete their own idea of what worship should be. And Jesus tears them down. So Jesus cleanses the temple, and in doing so, tells us about the wrong relationship with God. Now, I have to say, over the last week or so, I found that quite challenging piece. I don't know if you feel the same. Because it is challenging that we're called to that daily walk with Christ. It's a challenge to our motivation of a relationship with Christ. And it's a challenge to our desire to share our relationship with Christ. I found it quite challenging. Because we all know that we fall short of that sort of relationship, I suspect. And what we need is something a little bit more than an animal sacrifice. We need a whole new way to come to God. And that's the final point. So finally, a promise. Jesus is the temple. And there's a new way to access God. And this is verse 19 through to 22. So by cleansing the temple, Jesus has exposed the whole system that denies God the worship he deserves and blocks people from that true relationship with God. But at its deepest level, this passage really tells us that Jesus is the new temple. He's not just come to warn us of the dangers of the sacrificial system, but rather to change our whole basis of our relationship with God. You see, the temple has been held out as the dwelling place of God, but the Holy of Holies, where God dwelt, was hidden in the middle of the temple, unreachable to people, and only accessible by the chief priests. The people were held at arm's length from God. But now Jesus stands openly in the court of the Gentiles, the outermost court, visible to all, and proclaims that he is the new temple. He is the dwelling point of God on earth. He is the place where people to come to meet with God. He is the sacrifice that brings reconciliation with God. He is God revealed. He is God come to us. And the point is that we may never have the strength or the perseverance or the loyalty or the resolution on our own to live out the kind of relationship that Jesus is calling for. Day by day, we can commit ourselves to Christ, but day by day it might not be quite what we hoped for. What we need is a relationship with God that relies more on his strength rather than ours. And in verse 19, Jesus makes it clear that the function of the temple is transferred to him. So Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple and I will raise it again in 3 days." They replied, "It has taken 46 years to build the temple, and you are going to raise it in 3 days?" But the temple he had spoken of was his body. See, Jesus is the new temple, and that is an astonishing claim. Effectively, he's saying, forget the temple. Forget the sacrifice. Forget the Passover. Just come to me. I am the fulfillment of all of these things and every Old Testament promise. You see, Jesus is claiming to be the key to the whole Bible. All of the Old Testament points to him. And the point is that Jesus offers more. You see, we might have thought that it was worth approaching God for what we might get out of it in the here and now. We might have thought that. But it's nothing compared to what Jesus offers. He is the King over all. And through him we will share in the inheritance of all things. Or we might have based our relationship with God on the occasional act of sacrifice in order to keep our lives the same. But Jesus is the one perfect sacrifice through which our lives are transformed. Not into something worse, but into something better, something more complete. And by that sacrifice, we came out of slavery and we join the feast. We join the celebration and take on a new life, live with God at all times. And we might have thought it was difficult to share and bring people to God. But in Jesus, God has come to us. God has come to all people. We need to come beneath the blood of the Lamb. And the Lamb can be seen by all. So if you're looking for God, it's through Jesus that you will find him. Jesus is the dwelling place of God. And Jesus has control over the access to God. And if you are looking for a better relationship with God, it is through Jesus that you will find it. He is not only the dwelling place of God, but he is also the sacrifice through which our relationship with God is healed and perfected. You know, the warnings of Jesus points us away from the sacrificial system that offered us a superficial relationship with God. But the death of Jesus draws us into a perfect relationship with God, because he is the ongoing, once for all, perfect sacrifice that heals us of all wrong and brings us into a change, a transformation in our lives with God. Well, I wonder if you were more drawn to the Jesus of last week, bringing joy by turning water into wine, or the challenging Jesus of this week. But if you have been challenged, John ends the passage by saying that Jesus knows exactly where we are. He doesn't need us or anyone else to tell him. Man does not have to testify to man. And on the one hand, that means that we can be completely open with God. There's no point bluffing or hiding. We can be completely open. And on the other hand, it means that he knows exactly what we need. So come to Jesus. Put your trust in Jesus. Because he is the perfect temple where we come to find God. He is the perfect high priest who intercedes between us and God. He is the perfect sacrifice that cleanses us before God. And he has come to us to bring us into relationship with God that we could never hope to achieve for ourselves. So put aside any superficial relationship with God and come to Jesus, who died and was raised so that we might break free of slavery and join the feast in the promised land for all eternity. Amen.